Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Kai Wright, features editor at The Nation magazine, sitting in for Brian today. Good morning, everyone. Next month, The Nation and WNYC are going to launch a podcast in which, among other things, we're going to try to understand where Donald Trump supporters are coming from. Because whatever happens to the candidate, the sentiments he's tapped into will remain with us. So we're going to be asking his supporters about their real and their perceived grievances, a significant one of which is immigration, as we've already heard this morning. So in addition to talking to Trump supporters, we're going to also talk with their immigrant neighbors and coworkers and, in some cases, family members. What do they think about the status of the American dream? So I want to start that conversation today. I know there are immigrants listening now. Let us know what you think about your adopted home. Complexity, the ambivalence you have about it, all of that is welcome. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. We're constantly talking about the complicated, often conflicted beliefs that native-born Americans hold about immigrants. So we want to know, similarly, what are the complicated, conflicting feelings that immigrants hold about the United States? Let us know what you think. One of the most insightful representations of those complex feelings that I've read is Viet Thanh Nguyen's novel, The Sympathizer. It's fabulous. It's set at the fall of Saigon at the end of the Vietnam War, and its narrator is a man of many divided loyalties. He's a spy for the North, embedded in the South Vietnamese army, and a communist sleeper agent embedded in America, a place he's both drawn to deeply and repelled by. The book is smart, but fun and suspenseful, all the good stuff, which is why it won a Pulitzer Prize. I am thrilled to have Viet Thanh Nguyen join me now. When he's not writing Pulitzer Prize winning novels, he's a professor at USC in the English and American Studies and Ethnicity departments, where he writes academically about the Asian American immigrant experience. Viet Thanh Nguyen, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Kai. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you so much for writing this fabulous book.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
I do. So I gather one of the things that you aimed to do with the book was shift the vantage point through which we view this particular history or this moment in global history. Americans become sort of the players rather than the subjects. We're kind of heroes and anti-heroes of every story we touch as Americans, but in this one, you shift that frame. Is that a correct understanding of what you were trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up as an American, but also as a Vietnamese refugee living in the United States and constantly exposed to the American version of the Vietnam War. But at home and in the Vietnamese community, I was hearing a different story. And I realized that many Americans, probably most Americans, just had no idea how the Vietnamese and Vietnamese Americans felt about this experience. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the novel.
And so one of the really interesting parts of it to me is, in fact, when the South Vietnamese refugees arrive in the story, when they arrive in California, and they kind of discover that they've become extras in their own story. Tell me about that part a little bit.
Well, you know, for the Vietnam War was a tragedy for everyone involved. You know, the Americans lost 58,000 plus American soldiers, but they forget, Americans tend to forget, that 3 million Vietnamese of all sides died and, you know, 3 million Cambodians and Laotians died. So if you look at the math, it was really a tragedy centered on Southeast Asian experience. And that was certainly the way that the Vietnamese refugees felt about it. But again, when they looked around, they realized that Americans thought that this was an American war and not a Vietnamese war. And that gap really added to the emotional difficulties that the Vietnamese refugees had in adjusting to their new lives as Americans.
Yeah. And they kind of note that they become sort of, depending on who they're talking to, they're symbols. They're either symbols of the universality of the American project or of its failure.
Yeah, and that's what it means to be an extra, right? So even though in their own minds the Vietnamese were the stars of the show because they suffered so much and they had lost their country, in the U.S. they realized they were merely bit players who were going to be brought on to any kind of movie or novel or political discussion as extras who would simply buttress an American, one of the American viewpoints on this war. Yeah.
So we're going to bring in a caller to join us in this conversation with you, Viet. So Lenore in Scarsdale, you're on WNYC. Welcome.
Hi, good morning. As an immigrant trying to blend into the American culture, I find that you have to be two or three generations in before you really feel accepted as an American.
How long? When did you immigrate to the country then?
When I was 6 years old. I am 69 years old, and to this day, I still feel that I don't fit in.
Wow.
And that is given. That is, I may feel that way from Italian descent, Irish descent, English descent. You know.
And where did you or your family immigrate from?
Colombia, South America.
Okay. Viet, what do you think of this idea that it takes multiple generations before you quote fit in?
And well, I think that's probably true. I mean, like Lenora, I migrated, or I was a refugee when I was 4 years old, and I still don't feel like I completely fit in. And I think that's a pretty fairly common experience for first generation and what we call 1.5 generation immigrants. Now, whether or not by the second or third generation you fit in, I think has a lot to do with other factors besides how long you've been in this country. So I think that if you're an immigrant from England, after two or three generations, you can probably feel like an American, and you pass like as an American, you are an American. But for many people who are racially marked as not white from Asia, Latin America, Africa, even after two or three generations, even though they may want to feel American, sometimes other Americans look at them and don't see that. And that does make it hard to fit in even after that much time.
We're talking with Viet Thanh Nguyen, the author of the novel, the brilliant novel, The Sympathizer. We want to hear from immigrant listeners who have some thoughts about showing up in the United States and whether or not you fit in, whether or not the country is still welcoming to you, whether or not that has changed over the course of your time here. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Viet, one of the characters on this question of fitting in and where you belong, one of the characters in your novel, who's one of the narrator's love interests, she tells him she has to define herself not just as Japanese but Japanese American, because you have to claim Americanness. Americanness is never given to you. That's an interesting framing. I wonder if you can tell us about that.
Well, I think that a lot of immigrants do feel that they have to prove their Americanness constantly. With the case of Japanese Americans, for example, the United States interned 120,000 Japanese Americans during World War II, even though many of them were actually second generation, third generation Americans who were born here in the United States. So in times of crisis, when you're being marked as not American for whatever reason, a lot of immigrants, for example, today, Muslims, Arab Americans, feel that they constantly have to assert and to prove their Americanness in a way that other Americans, let's say many white Americans oftentimes, don't have to prove their Americanness.
Do you think in this moment, given the political moment we're in, we're having a campaign in which we are deeply debating immigration, do you think that is improving? Is that making folks have to assert more or less? How is this impacting the conversation in immigrant communities, you think?
Well, I think depends who you're talking about. Obviously, Democrats are more welcoming, I think, in general, to the immigrant experience. At least that's how many immigrants feel about it. You saw that with the whole debate over the Khan family, and Donald Trump's reaction to the Khan family's proclamation of their son's heroism dying for an American war. Depending on which politician is talking, sometimes immigrants do feel that their immigrant identity or their claim to Americanness is under assault, and they have to assert how it is that they belong to this country and what they have done to prove that.
Boris from Newark wants to join our conversation. Boris, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. Hello?
Yep, we can hear you.
I came to this country from Soviet Union in 1979, and you can hear my accent, but I feel this is America for me. This is my home. I think that there is a problem with immigration in general. There are people who feel that this is not a country. This is just a place to make money. So they come, they maintain a dual citizenship, and they just want to make money and go back to. So in a way, I understand where Trump supporters coming from, because, yeah, this is not really a country as it used to be.
Well, and you say it's not really a country as it used to be. Flesh that out for me. First off, how when did you immigrate to the United States?
I came in 79, and I over this period, I see that the country really shifted toward the third world. There's more immigration from third world countries. There are different cultures coming. I mean, I'm my background is Jewish. I can tell you that most Russian Jews support Trump because they've seen the type of neighbors they're getting right now, and they're concerned. They're concerned that this will shift the policies and it will shift this country toward the places where they came from, and they don't want that.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. There are more immigrants, Boris says, coming from essentially non-white countries. Do you think that fact is true? And two, how does that fact shape the conversation about immigrants?
Well, I think it's true only because for a significant part of American history, during the late 19th through the middle of the 20th century, the United States, through a variety of laws, excluded immigrants from non-white countries coming to the United States. So yes, we are seeing more immigrants coming from so-called third world countries, basically countries that are dominated by non-white populations. But that's only because of the opening and the democratization of American immigration laws. And I think that in response to Boris's point that, newer immigrants may not feel an attachment to this country, I think we have to be historical about it. Previous generations of immigrants have also, certain numbers of them, have also tried to maintain dual allegiances to different countries as well. And that hasn't always been non-white people, right? But it's through the passage of time, it's through the establishment of second and third generations that we see the lessening of that attachment to a country of origin. And it's particularly dangerous, I think, for to argue that Jewish people are somehow going to be more assimilated into American society versus these other populations that try to maintain dual allegiances, because that whole idea of Jewish people not feeling loyalty to the country that they belong in has been a stigma against Jewish people for such a long time. We live in a globalized world, basically, and claiming a national identity is important, but we also have to recognize that being fluid, being able to move between countries, this is also potentially a plus as well that we shouldn't stigmatize.
I guess that's what I was going to ask: is does it matter this whole question of allegiance and loyalty and having more than one place that you let's say that all immigrants have multiple allegiances? Why do we care? Does that matter?
Well, I think one other way to phrase it, we shouldn't care. And actually, I think it's a strength that people can move between countries in a globalized world. It adds to this idea that part of America's exceptionalism is that it can actually welcome different groups of people who can build allegiances between different countries. But we shouldn't also simply look at immigrants. I mean, the people who are actually the most nationless in terms of their identities are probably wealthy people. They're the people who are moving their money to offshore tax havens, who would abandon the United States at the first opportunity, and not enough is being made to point out how the greatest pressure against national loyalty is oftentimes being exerted by people who want the greatest access for their capital.
I'm going to go to Min in Brooklyn. Min, are you there for us?
Yeah, I am.
Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I came to the States. I'm from Vietnam. I came to the States in 94 when I was 1.5. And I, under refugee status, because my father was involved with the Vietnam War with the Americans. So now being here and identifying as a Vietnamese American, I think I have two points. The first one being that there's a kind of schism that I experience, especially among my peers when I have conversations with them or in class about, whether or not they identify as American or their affinity or to that kind of nationalism. And for me, at least right now, it's hard to escape it's hard to not consider myself American because of that difference between, let's say, my parents, who do more identify themselves as Vietnamese. And the second, speaking about my parents, is that I think I think in the introduction you made, you had spoken something about the American dream. And, you know, I think they were consciously aware that, you know, they were going to come to the States and that they weren't going to experience it directly themselves, that the experience was going to be given to me, whatever, you know, how problematic the American dream is, that it was mine to experience, not my parents.
And how do you feel about that? Is that true? Has that been the case?
I mean, I would say I have mixed feelings about it, because in a way it's yes, like I've managed to go, I'm the first person to go to college, and I've had opportunities that has been given to me because I'm here, or that it's available to me. But at the same time, I think I look at sort of the politics and history of race in America and how I experience race, and it's and how I experience other people who are disadvantaged. And not quite sure how potent or realistic the American dream is, and how I have really benefited from it.
Which I wonder how your parents feel about your what sounds like real ambivalence about it, given that, at least how you describe it to them, the point was to give you access to this idea.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I wonder about your parents and how they feel about your ambivalence to the American dream, given you sort of describe that you feel like they came to give you this access to these things, but it sounds like you're not sure you even have access to them. How do they think about it?
I mean, I think just during the time, I do, but in terms of my access to opportunity, but I think they see it, but I don't know if I'm answering your question directly, but in terms of the American dream as this sort of large ideology that is promised, that if you work hard, which is the term that I think a lot of immigrants say, if you work hard, then you have access to it. I don't know if that's wholly true for many cases.
For people of any descent. Thank you, Min, for that. We're going to go to Dimitri in North Bergen, New Jersey. Dimitri, hi. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi. How you doing?
How you doing, Dimitri?
Yeah, I'm good.
Go ahead, chime in.
So I'm an immigrant from Haiti. I moved here in 2007, so I've been here for almost 10 years. And being from Haiti, that means I'm black. But the experience has been that, considering that I'm black, I'm just considered as an African-American when I'm not speaking to people, because I look black, of course. But there has always been a difference in where you are. So when I'm in school, for example, when I was in college, I was treated more like an equal person to other Americans, by the professors, by other students, and by the staff in general. But when I'm on the streets and dealing with people, the perception has been different. People are always asking you about your country, where you're from, how do you like it? Hey, there's always, every time somebody sees you and you talk different, they always ask you so many questions, and that makes you feel like you don't belong here, because the first thing they want to know is about, you know, where are you from and why are you here? How do you like it here and things like that? And dealing with the police, the good thing about being immigrant, being black, is that you're already treated bad as a black person. So when the police sees you, they just treat you as a black person. But I could imagine how, you know, Hispanics are seen differently than black people by the police or by other people in general. Because as black immigrants, once we are not speaking, or we don't have the accent, we are just seen as black Americans, and we are just treated as bad as we would be treated if we were immigrants anyway. But in general, the experience as an immigrant for me has been this mix. When I'm at work, I'm seen as an immigrant, as in Haitian, and I'm not treated as good as I would be treated if I was, for example, a white person. But when I'm at the store, it's the same. But when I'm around my friends and around my neighbors, once they get to know me, they see me as one of them. Because even though I am Haitian and I have an accent, I still have pretty much the same ideals as people here have. Because I went to high school here, went to college here. I know the same thing, and I studied the same history and everything. So I really do not know as much about Haiti as I know about here. And I feel like it's unfair to be treated differently as somebody who's from here.
Thank you for that, Dimitri. Viet, one of the interesting things in your novel is that the narrator, who is a North Vietnamese spy, communist sleeper agent, part of it is that he's an expert on America. He understands America better than most Americans. That is a really interesting vantage from which to talk about this. Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, I think that actually may be true for a lot of immigrants and refugees. I mean, I was drawing from my own experience. I mean, we know our own culture as immigrants and refugees, but we also have to know American culture. Like Dimitri says, in order to survive in this country, you have to know American culture, and you have to know what other Americans think, especially white Americans. So we as immigrants or refugees have to pay attention to dominant culture in American society. That makes us much more expert about the way that the American majority works than we know much more about the American majority than the American majority knows about us. So there's, and if we're talking about American culture, there's that vast discrepancy between the knowledges that some Americans have about American culture and what immigrants and refugees have about American culture, because we just have to be more sophisticated in order to survive.
In order to claim the American part, you've got to know more. I want to go to Maria in Hoboken, New Jersey. Maria, welcome to WNYC. I gather that you feel American, but white Americans don't see you that way.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, yes. I actually immigrated here when I was 22. I'm 50 now. And nowadays, especially with the election and all that stuff, I could actually, tell more or less, mostly white people, they don't say anything to me, but you could tell by the expression of their face and by the way they look at you. It's like there's a question mark in their expressions and saying, you don't belong here. You know, why don't you, go back to the Philippines? I don't really feel fully accepted. But it doesn't really bother me that much because they're strangers. You know, it's people that I try and reach out to. I don't care the color of your skin because you're born with it, okay? That's just it. That's just how you are. But I reach to all kinds of races. I'm a very friendly person. And for me, America is my country, even if I was born in the Philippines.
Maria, let me,
I feel American.
Can I ask you this, Maria? It sounds like you have young children in the background. How do you feel about the future for them? Do you feel that the opportunities and both economically and culturally that you are here gaining in the United States, assuming you feel like you're gaining them, are going to be available to them as well?
I really hope so. I really hope so. That's why I really hope, everybody vote. Because I keep hearing a lot of people, and I do agree with them to a certain point, that the choices that we have for president, it's lesser of two evils. Nobody likes the two candidates. It's amazing. To me, the election year, it's scary, it's exciting, it's weird, it's everything. And that's the reason why you are an American. You exercise your vote.
Because it's a chaotic process.
Be a full American. You know, because I love this country. Despite of the problems that we have right now, despite all that, I'd rather be here than anywhere else in the world, even my home country where I was born.
Thank you, Maria. Viet, let me put to you about the future. There is some polling that shows that if you talk to immigrants, and I think particularly young immigrants, there is way more optimism about the future economically, culturally, than in the United States than there are if you talk to native-born Americans. Are you familiar with that polling as well? What do you think about sort of generational shifts and the differences between the way immigrants see the future here and the way others do?
Well, I'm not surprised by that. And I think it has to do as much with economics as it has to do with culture. So let's say you're a white person in the United States. Economically, let's say you might even be doing well, but you may feel that the future of the country is going downhill. That has not so much to do with economics as it has to do with this feeling that the sense of privilege that you've taken for granted, the sense that you own this country and that America is a white country, a Christian country, is being eroded by the presence of these new immigrants. And from the perspective of new immigrants and refugees, even if they may be economically struggling, perhaps, as Maria says, there's a sense of optimism that this country is increasingly one that is open to you because of the shifting tide of demographics. And so that there's hope there that this can really be truly the multicultural country that it's always promised to be. But it's a mixed picture. You know, I go back to the Min's comment, the Vietnamese-American student, and her conflicted feelings about the American dream. And I know specifically about Vietnamese-Americans that many of them are optimistic about the American dream, but some of them carry it out by going back to Vietnam to find job opportunities that they couldn't get here in the United States because of basically racial discrimination. So this is a world that is complex. And for some immigrants, perhaps it's a world that's more open. They can assimilate into American society, but they also know they have opportunities to go back to their country of origin or their parents' countries of origin. And perhaps for some white Americans, they don't feel that either option now exists for them.
Viet Thanh Nguyen, the author of The Sympathizer and a professor at USC. It has been wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kai.
After this, we'll be back with Ari Berman to discuss his new book, or his old book, on the Voting Rights Act, Give Us the Ballot.